You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Happy New Year, folks. It's 2020, and if you're still contemplating a New Year's resolution, how about making a resolution to live to 100 or maybe even longer? My guest today wants to help you get there. Since writing his groundbreaking National Geographic article on the five places in the world known as Blue Zones, where the most people live to 100 or more, Dan Buettner has become a longevity expert focusing on helping Americans live longer, healthier lives. Now he's taken what he's learned and put it into his first cookbook titled The Blue Zones Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100. Today, Dan Buettner returns to the podcast to share some cooking secrets that he learned from sitting in the kitchens of grandmas in all five of the Blue Zones, including a Sardinian minestrone that he says has all the properties of a superfood, a simple dish that he calls the healthiest breakfast in the world, and the Greek island of Icaria's unique take on the Mediterranean diet. He also reveals the health benefits of dietary monotony and periodic fasting, why how you eat is just as important as what you eat, and why you might want to load up on beans and veggies instead of meat and eggs. Plus, he talks about traveling to Okinawa, Japan with his remarkably spry 84-year-old dad and visiting a 100-year-old Costa Rican cowboy who still rides his horse every day. Coming up with Dan Buettner in just a moment. Dan Buettner is the founder of Blue Zones, an organization that helps Americans live longer, healthier lives. A National Geographic explorer, his groundbreaking work on longevity led to his 2005 National Geographic cover story, Secrets of Living Longer, and a second, The Search for Happiness, in 2017. Buettner has authored three national bestsellers, The Blue Zones, Thrive, and The Blue Zones Solution, as well as his last book, The Blue Zones of Happiness. Now he's out with a new cookbook that's inspired by the diets of centenarians around the world. It's called The Blue Zones Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100, and it's now the top-selling book on all of Amazon, I'm told, and debuted at number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list and the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. Congratulations, Dan Buettner. Welcome back to the show.
That's a delight to be here. You know, I fancy myself a real writer. And all my other books are very science-heavy. And then I write a cookbook, and it does far better than anything I've ever written.
Well, yeah, it's a perfect holiday gift. Everyone's buying cookbooks at Christmas time. Yeah, makes sense. Well, this has been almost, I think, 15 years since you first wrote that article for National Geographic about these five pockets of longevity around the globe where people live to 100 or more. Since then, you have really become a Blue Zones evangelist with multiple books, products, speaking engagements, the Blue Zones Project, which is promoting Blue Zones lifestyles in cities around America. Has this now become your full-time job, or do you still go out on assignments for National Geographic?
I'm still an active writer for National Geographic magazine. In fact, I have a big story in January's issue of the magazine. I do a lot with them. So I wear essentially two hats. One, I'm a writer for Geographic, but then I run this organization. It's more than just evangelizing. We're actually a city turns their entire community health strategy over to us.
Wow.
To try to mimic what we found in these so-called blue zones and reverse heart disease and cancer, diabetes, and obesity. And we've been incredibly successful.
Now, you've got this beautiful new cookbook, The Blue Zones Kitchen. I loved it. I haven't cooked anything yet, but I love it. I love the photos. It's beautifully put together. And I also noticed that you got a rave review on the back cover of the book from another friend of the show, Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods fame. Can't do much better than that for a cookbook. How do you know him? Are you friends? Is that a Minnesota connection?
Yeah,
or what?
We both live in Minnesota. Yeah. We go back probably 20 years.
Really?
As we're friends in real life. And, you know, most of my other books, I'm kind of seeking scientists to give me a blurb, but I think there was probably nobody better than Andrew Zimmern to critique a travel book that involves food, because he's sort of the master, the living master. So
yeah, he's such a nice guy. I love him.
He really is, and he's a great talker, and he's got a heart of gold in the real. And it's one of these people who you love to see succeed.
Yeah,
and succeed he is.
Definitely. Now, is there evidence that like pig brains or insects are the kind of things that he goes for promote longevity?
Not much longevity. Okay. Evidence behind that, but we'll have a lot of fun along the way. And it's great for ratings.
Yeah. Now this is a vegetarian cookbook. Why did you decide to focus on meatless recipes in here?
So the idea here, I've been working on this for 15 years because it took 15 years to find the places where people live statistically longest and then tease out what they're doing. So the foundation of this book is 155 dietary surveys done in over the past 100 years to find out exactly what centenarians ate to live to be 100. Huh. And in the very front of the book, we have a guide, a food guide that says, if you want to live to be 100, here's what 100-year-olds really did. It doesn't come from a Petri dish or some, you know, doctor on South Beach. Mm-hmm. This is what they were really eating. And because I work for National Geographic, we're very rooted in evidence and we did the homework. So then in all of these blue zones, the American food culture is hitting like a tsunami and destroying a way of eating that's been around for 500 years. So photographer David McLean was a legendary National Geographic photographer. Two of us spent 2.5 years to go up in the villages to find old people, to find out the way they've eaten on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So I didn't set out to do a vegetarian cookbook. I set out to capture the recipes of people who live to be 100, and they happen to be almost all peasant food, simple plant-based food. But the genius comes in how they make these simple foods delicious. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to eat them for very long if you don't find them delicious.
Yeah, and I remember when we last talked about the typical diet in the blue zones. There's a lot of rice and beans, sweet potatoes, not a lot of meat, as we mentioned. At the time, it all sounded pretty bland to me. Do they find a way to make it pretty tasty?
You can make cotton balls tasty with enough oil and the right spices. Yeah. So the secret to making plant-based foods taste good is usually olive oil and something spicy and some the right herbs. Here's the Blue Zone diet, and it is tasty. So 90 to 100%. Whole plant-based food.
Wow.
Whole foods plant-based, 90 to 100%.
That's pretty significant compared to the U.S. I don't know what ours is, but ours has to be like, 50% at best?
Yeah, it's probably 30.
Mm-hmm.
We eat about 206 pounds of meat every year, which is, I hate to say it, but if you're eating meat more than about once a day, your chances of cancer, GI tract cancer, diabetes, and heart disease about triple. Whew. So even though in blue zones people do eat meat, it's on average 5 times a month. It's a celebratory food. So they're not eating bacon for breakfast and bologna for lunch and then beef for dinner. You know, it's a wedding or a birthday or it's Sunday after church. They're enjoying. But they're quotidian foods, the pillars of every longevity diet in the world. 5 foods. Whole grains, nuts, greens, tubers like sweet potatoes, and then beans. And if you're eating about a cup of beans a day, it's probably adding 4 years to your life expectancy if you're middle-aged.
Wow. See, I keep telling my wife that you're big on beans and how it's the superfood and all that. And she keeps telling me that it's too many carbohydrates if I have beans every day.
Well, of course, your wife is always right, but she's less right here. Okay. No, I would disagree with her on that. First of all, beans are mostly protein. They're mostly mostly fiber.
Okay.
And
I mean, maybe she just doesn't want to be downwind of me. Maybe she's just saying it's about the carbohydrates then.
Yeah, she could be right on that. But, you know, when it comes to gas, you have this microbiome, 100 trillion bacteria in your gut. It's a virtual organ. It weighs about 7 pounds.
Wow.
And it morphs to accommodate the food you're eating. So if you're eating meat and cheese and eggs, the type of bacteria that thrive are bacteria that putrefy. That's where that word comes, that putrefy meat, cheese, and eggs. And it literally creates a toxin that adds to your chances of cancer and heart disease, TMAO it's called.
Okay.
But when you're eating beans, if you gently introduce them into your diet, you know, maybe just a few tablespoons at first, but working your way up to a cup a day after about 2 weeks, your microbiome, the type of bacteria that flourish, are the good ones that take fiber from beans and they turn it into something called short-chain fatty acids, which leach in your bloodstream, and they act like a hormone, and they modulate your immune system. So it's not going amok and turning on your arteries and your joints, but it's still strong to attack microbes, modulates inflammation. The root of every age-related disease is chronic inflammation. And if you're not feeding your gut fiber, your inflammation goes out of whack. And it even modulates your mood. So I report on this in the January's issue of National Geographic. We have vastly underestimated the power of that 6 or 7 pound virtual organ called our microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
And we fail to realize when you eat the standard American diet, burger and fries or pizza, it virtually has no fiber.
Huh.
Fiber and a broad variety of fibers are what's going to keep us healthy and keep us going for the long run.
Now, you also suggest cutting back on eggs to no more than 3 per week. I mean, that's one omelet, 3 eggs per week. And I'm just curious, what is the current thinking on eggs? Because they go back and forth. They were bad for you. Then they were good for you. I don't know what to think anymore.
That's right. And, you know, America's confused because almost all dietary research refutes itself.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard the argument about fat. Fat is good,
right.
And then
it's
fat is bad. And now food is good. So the approach I took with the Blue Zones Kitchen is a very meticulous meta-analysis. I did it with Harvard. If you want to know what a 100-year-old ate to live to be 100, you have to know what they were eating when they were little kids and when they're 20. And 40 and 80.
Okay.
So we reached back and found these surveys done in the 20s and the 40s and the 60s.
Huh.
And we aggregated it. We averaged them all out. So when my book says no more than 3 eggs a week, that's because people in these blue zones, 5 parts of the world, they're not eating eggs more than 3 times a week. They're not eating meat more than 5 times a week.
Okay.
They're eating mostly grains, beans, nuts.
Okay.
But they don't know how to make them taste good.
Yeah.
And I would say the big revelation of this book, we don't put any of our culinary excellence into making beans taste good. We put our culinary excellence in, you know, baby back ribs
beans are an afterthought.
Yeah, pork
totally.
Belly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you turn the genius of all these chefs like Andrew Zimmern onto plant-based foods, you can make them sing. You can. They're way more delicious, and make you feel better than you know, a meaty, cheesy, fatty dinner, lunch, or breakfast.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite recipe in the book so far?
So I met the longest-lived family in the history of the world.
Really?
9 siblings, the collective age 863 years. So they ranged in age 91 to 109, all brothers and sisters. They ate the exact same lunch every day of their life. A true sourdough bread, which is metabolically very different than plain old white bread. True sourdough, it takes a couple of days to rise. A small glass, 3 ounces of red wine, of Cannonau wine.
Mm-hmm.
And a minestrone, which has 4 beans, barley, tomato, garlic, onions, some vegetable broth, and finish, you know, cook slowly and then finish with a beautiful extra virgin olive oil. That is That was what they have every single day of their life. And that is an absolute longevity cocktail. I don't really believe in superfoods, but if I had to pick one meal that's a longevity all-star meal, it would be this minestrone. Because when you add barley and beans together, it's a whole protein. A bowl of that has as much protein as a three-ounce steak. But it's an absolute riot, a fiesta for your microbiome, because you have all these different strains of fiber that is making your microbiome happy. Mm-hmm. And when your microbiome's happy, it makes you happy.
Yeah. So in Sardinia, they don't just eat this like a cup for an appetizer. It's a full meal, right?
Yes.
That's you a
don't
whole
need
meal.
To, yeah. You don't need to eat anything more.
Yeah. Now, for this book, Sardinia was one of five places that you returned to, and you spent a lot of time with grandmas sitting in their kitchens, just watching and listening. What kind of things did you observe about the way they cook?
They cook at home. Mm-hmm. They only use about 20 ingredients over and over again.
No kidding.
The ingredients kind of shift with seasons, what's in season, but a shockingly few number of ingredients. There's actually a theory that when you're using fewer ingredients, there's less stress on your body and your immune system through something called methylation.
Interesting.
That may indeed be contributing to longevity. They tend to cook with friends. I observed this beautiful practice in Sardinia where ladies, not just old ladies, but young and old alike, they meet on Friday afternoon in this special hut or house that has a huge oven, wood-burning oven, and they make bread together. They make the whole weeks of sourdough bread. The grandma brings the starter dough, and they'll spend 3 or 4 hours. And during that time, they're talking, they're socializing, they're, you know, kind of bitching about their husbands and so forth. And but also getting a workout, kneading the bread and stoking the fire, and they all go home with a week's worth of bread. It's a beautiful. So it's cooking's often a communal practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interested in this idea of kind of a limited variety of foods. I kind of thought that the variety was the spice of life and all that. But, you know, do you think that dietary monotony may be one of the keys to longevity? And how does that work? Is it just it's easier for the body to break down or what?
We don't know for sure. My colleague, Gianni Pess, who's been studying centenarians for over 30 years now in Sardinia, his theory has to do with something called methylation. So the idea is we have a certain number of cells in our body that fight foreign invaders in our system, whether it's a microbiome or it's a weird new compound or a pesticide. They turn on to mount an immune defense. And when they're turned on, they're very good at fighting off the disease at hand. But the problem is there's only a finite number of these cells. Once you turn them on, you can't turn them back off again.
Okay.
So once you've turned on too many, your body can't mount an immune defense, and then you're more susceptible to cancer when you're older or more severe versions of diseases. So when you bombard your system with foreign, you know, spice of life ingredients, as you say, hundreds, you're eating Korean one night, Mexican another night, Italian the other night.
Yeah,
those are perceived as foreign ingredients by your body, and you may unnecessarily be exhausting sort of a finite immune system.
Okay, now let me ask you about these grandmas that you were hanging around with, cooking with. You know, some folks can be very territorial about old family recipes and that sort of thing. Were there any of these grandmas who were skeptical about sharing their secrets with an outsider?
No, and the reason is that they know that this 500-year-old culinary tradition is disappearing. And they know National Geographic, there's respect.
Mm-hmm.
They know I've been going to these blue zones for 15 years, so they know me and they trust me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm... In many instances, I've captured recipes that will disappear if they're not captured. And you know, the book is, it looks more like a 300-page National Geographic article. So I've tried to capture the ingredients, the techniques, and the people doing the cooking in a way that there's archival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something you could have in 20 years. And
yeah, because like you said, this may be a dying way of life. You have all these interlopers that are coming into these communities, fast food and greater connectivity, electricity. And
that's right.
Roads for cars, less people walking.
That's right. It's not, you know, evil. It's what we call progress. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. progress is really regression, mm-hmm. I think, in many cases, yeah. because there's this beautiful way that's worked for hundreds of years, thousands in some cases, to make people healthy and happy, by the way. And as they adopt fast foods and junk foods and mechanized conveniences, mm-hmm. their obesity rate is soaring and their longevity is plummeting.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that strikes me about the contrast between the people in most of the blue zones and the transhumanists and the tech moguls here in the U.S. who are trying to hack longevity. Just a couple of months ago, I had Dave Asprey on, and he was talking about spending a fortune on blood transfusions and stem cell treatments and vampire facials and all kinds of experimental and sometimes painful longevity treatments. But here in the blue zones, most of them aren't rich. They probably live on low to lower middle class income. They're also deliberately not tailoring their lifestyle to live 100. I doubt that most of them give longevity much of a thought. They're just kind of going about their lives and keeping it simple.
You're exactly right. They no more know how they got to be 100 than a tall man knows how he got to be tall. And the core revelation of Blue Zones for living longer, you know, the Dave Aspreys, I mean, it's sort of fun to pursue these things. Mm-hmm. And I salute kind of innovation. But there's no pill, there's no hormone, there's no genetic intervention, even on the scientific horizon, that has been shown to stop or slow mm-hmm. aging or reverse it, much less. So where you have true longevity, people who are reaching their mid-90s, even 100, with vitality and enjoying life, it's never the result of any of the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get on diets, they don't adopt exercise programs. They don't call an 800 number and buy supplements. The problem we have in this country is we've been marketed this idea that the road to health is something to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
You find a program, right. You muster the discipline, the focus, and you get on this. And the problem is that fails for almost all the people almost all the time because, you know, we're hardwired for novelty. In blue zones, longevity is not something that is pursued. It's something that ensues from the right environment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're living in a place where the cheapest and most accessible foods are the foods in the blue zone kitchens, basically delicious peasant food. Every time they go to work or to a friend's house, it occasions a walk. The option to disappear into your device or up into your house and watch TV isn't there because somebody's going to be knocking at your door,
right.
getting you out to the village or getting you right. down to church. So we're not going to beat this $3.7 trillion a year healthcare bill until we shift the focus from beating the dead horse of individual responsibility
mm-hmm.
to reshaping the environments we live in. So that health and longevity can ensue.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about another place that you visited again, Okinawa, Japan. And you actually brought your 83-year-old dad along with you. What did he think of Okinawa?
I brought his name's Roger Buettner. He's now 84.
Okay.
And he came to most of these blue zones. And the reason I brought, part of him is because he's the epitome of blue zones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he grew up on a farm. You know, he goes to surgery and he's like, oh, Christ, this is how we lived as kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, little did I know that, you know, I had a blue zones father. But he was a farmer. He grew up on meat and potatoes. And to have him in Okinawa, and I had him testing all the recipes. So
A lot of tofu, sweet potatoes.
Yeah. If I gave him the fermented tofu and he turned up his nose at it, it didn't make it in the book.
Yeah.
So I use him as kind of a litmus test for middle American tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually incredibly helpful at doing it because I can only get 100 recipes in the book. I probably observed 220 of them and he helped me triage the ones that middle Americans aren't going to eat.
Does he still get around pretty well? I guess he must if he traveled with you.
Yeah, he just spent the last week in Utah hunting elk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's the epitome of a
So has he embraced any of the Blue Zone's practices? Or, like you said, I guess he was kind of already doing all of this.
Well, he was, you know, he grew up on a farm. They had a cow, they had a pig, they had chickens, and he was a big meat and dairy eater.
Yeah.
And he's completely seen the light. And, I mean, he'll still eat it on celebratory times, but, you know, he's probably 90% vegetarian too. Mm-hmm. And so is my mom. And I a lot of their health problems evaporated when they let go of the bacon in the morning habit.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Now, speaking of cowboys and farmers, in the Nicoyan Peninsula, I was kind of amused. You encounter a 100-year-old cowboy named, I think his name was Jose Bonifacio. Is that right? What was he like? He goes riding every day, right?
Yeah, that's 103 amazing. Years old.
Oh, 103. Now, wow.
Yeah. Well, God. We first encountered him at 101. But he, he still rides his horse. He has a girlfriend that lives down the street from him. He rides and
how
still
old is
courts
she?
Here. I think she's a young 97.
Okay.
But, I actually, Maria Shriver came with us to shoot a piece for the Today Show.
Oh.
And he took a shine to Maria
tried
to show Maria his bedroom, and Maria wasn't going in there.
Yeah, I think I remember you saying that Nicoyan men are famous players, aren't
they?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I met a Nicoyan great-grandfather who had 99 offspring by about seven women. And, but you know, I mean, culturally, that's something was traditionally more accepted there. It's, of course, changing now. But we had a Jose's daughters who do most of the cook for us.
Uh-huh.
So in Nicoya, they have an outdoor kitchen, and they're phenomenal at making beans. The Nicoyans invented what I would argue is the greatest diet in human history.
Really?
Well, they co-invented it with all the rest of the Mesoamericans. It's three ingredients. Whole grain corn, which undergoes a process called nixtamalization. It's soaked in lye, which frees up, makes the niacin bioavailable and the amino acids. Beans and squash. And that combination is known as the three sisters. And when you combine those three, you have all the protein for human sustenance, rich in complex carbohydrates, rich in except for vitamin B12.
Okay.
You could live your whole life just eating those three foods.
Yeah, I think you say that they have the healthiest breakfast in the world, something called, I hope I have this pronounced right, Gallo Pinto?
That's
right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What is that?
So it comes from metaphorically, it's a chicken with dots in it. You know,
okay.
Painted chicken or painted rooster, but it's... it's actually beans that have been cooked with red pepper, onions, and cilantro, and then added to rice with avocado on the side and then a corn tortilla. Mm-hmm. You know, in America here, we tend to think of breakfast as either eggs and bacon, which aren't good for you,
or cereal.
It's cereal, mm-hmm. which tend to be really sweet and very high glycemic. And, you know, both of them are going to might taste good going down, but they're going to leave you sluggish by mid-morning.
Mm-hmm.
This gallo pinto, it's a slow-absorbing food. So it fuels you throughout the whole morning. It's got all the proteins you need. And also these gallo pinto is made with leftover rice. And it's interesting when you let rice for a day, this is part of the genius of these people, the amount of soluble fiber goes up. And soluble fiber, as it moves through your digestive system, it absorbs excess hormones and toxins and helps move it through your system and out rather than, you know, leaving these things sit around and cause trouble.
Right. Huh.
So these foods have been around for centuries for a reason. There's been a certain amount of natural selection in these long-lived cultures that have favored foods that are not only tasty and delicious, but are favoring the survival of the people there.
Okay. Now, next up, I want to talk about the Greek island of Icaria. We've all heard of the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet, but the Icarians kind of have their own distinct version of that. They tweak it a little, huh? How does it vary from mainland fare?
So the thing to realize about the Mediterranean, depending where you are in the Mediterranean, it's different. It's different in Italy and France and Spain, sure. and Northern Africa, which is Morocco, is Mediterranean.
Yeah.
But the Icarian version is the purest. It's the most strict. And like other versions, there's fruits and vegetables and olive oil and a little bit of wine, et cetera. But the Icarians have a lot more beans and a lot more greens.
Okay.
So there's probably 100 varieties of greens, you know, spinach and you know, there's kale there and there's mustard greens and things we'd recognize. But a lot of things we, you know, it looks like the type mm-hmm. of stuff we'd weed whack from our backyard. They're baking them into beautiful pies or sauteing them with lemon and olive oil and making them taste good. Huh. And a lot of these greens have 10 times the antioxidants of red wine.
No kidding.
And it's a really important part of their diet. And
And it's interesting to me that, you know, so many of these are either islands or coastal communities, and yet they tend to limit their fish consumption.
So again, there's no limiting going on.
They
eat what's accessible to them.
Okay. Okay.
You bring up a good point. Even though they live on islands, they live inland.
Okay.
Sardinia, for the Blue Zone in Sardinia, it's ironic because every village is situated on a slope. 15 miles in the distance, you see the beautiful Mediterranean Sea, but nobody goes there because until about 1970, there was no real roads.
Mm-hmm.
So it took you a day to get to the sea.
Hmm.
The sea was pretty inhospitable.
Okay.
So you'd have to spend a day or whatever fishing. And then you have to bring the fish back up, you know, 3 days later. And, you know, it's not all that fresh. So they're really a shepherding and small agricultural community.
Yeah, that's interesting. And now some people theorize that the Icarians' secret to longevity is these concentrations of radioactive radon in the ground. Is there anything to that? Are they some kind of superheroes or what?
Yeah. No, there are some. There was one group of scientists that theorized that this radon had something to do with it. And Pliny the Elder, a Roman historian, actually writes about Icaria and these hot baths where this radon bubbles up. But it's aqueous radon. It's not in the air. They're not breathing it like we have in our cellars.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I don't take much stock in that.
Okay.
But what I do take stock in Icaria, it has the lowest known levels of dementia in the world, probably a fifth of what we have in the United States. So you start looking around what explains this low rates of dementia, and you see every day of their lives, they are either drinking teas or adding herbs to their food, and it's either oregano, rosemary, sage, or kind of a catnip.
Mm-hmm.
They also use dandelion greens. These are all powerful antioxidants and diuretics,
mm-hmm.
so they lower your blood pressure. And the reason why I think they have lower blood pressure, less heart disease, less vascular dementia, is because they're drinking these teas every day. Infusions of them.
No kidding.
And it's a very subtle thing, but I can only draw a correlation. They drink the teas, low dementia, but I believe the mm-hmm. connection's strong.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I read in here that, I guess, in Icaria and throughout, I guess, all of Greece, the Greek Orthodox Church calls for more than 200 days of fasting per year. That's more than half of the year that they're fasting. And I remember, I think in Okinawa, they have a whole ritual around trying to only eat until they're 70 or 80% full. Is some kind of fasting or calorie limiting part of all of these cultures?
It is. Almost all Blue Zones have gone through periods of hardship mm-hmm. around the war or thereafter when people couldn't get as many calories as they want. To your point about the religious fasts, I mean, they're not no food fasts, but they're mm-hmm. cutting out eggs and meat and so forth.
Yeah.
They do tend to get all of their calories in about an 8 to 10 hour window.
Mm-hmm.
So breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper. Mm-hmm. In Okinawa, they many people don't even have dinner. So
okay,
there is an element of intermittent fasting. But again, it's unconscious. You know, it's just that's what everybody does.
And then the fifth blue zone that you visit is a little different from the others. That is, of course, right down the road from us, Loma Linda, California. And Loma Linda is known for having this large population of Seventh-day Adventists who are vegetarians, of course. Where does that vegetarianism come from? I've always wondered that. Is that some kind of a biblical backstory there or what?
Yeah, so Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 through 29, God lays out the, and I'm not a big Bible reader, so I'm not, you know, I'm not a spokesperson for the Adventists.
Although you do say that religion is a big part of this. All of these cultures have some kind of religious practice that may figure into their longevity.
That's right. Yeah. They're all, yes, people. Yeah. And we know that people who belong to religion have higher life expectancy than people who don't. But once again, it's a correlation. Yeah. You know, I should probably go to church more, but I don't.
But vegetarianism.
Yeah. So, okay. So you read these passages from the Bible, and God lays out the diet to the Garden of Eden. I always thought somebody ought to seize this and do a diet book, but God says very clearly, every tree that bears fruit, so that's citrus and apples and peaches and tomatoes, and then every plant that bears seed, so that's nuts and beans and legumes and whole grains. And then God, one stanza later, God goes on to talk about green plants.
Huh.
So the Adventists just take that literally.
Okay.
Their founder of their church, a woman named Ellen White, who wrote around the turn of the last century, was absolutely prescient at, you look at the dietary guidelines she set out for the Adventists, it lines up almost perfectly with the American Heart Association. They do eat some meat, although the longest lived Adventists, there's something called the Adventist Health Study that followed 102,000 Adventists for 30 years and split them up into four categories. You have meat eaters, you have egg and cheese eaters with vegetables, you have pescatarians who are vegans plus fish, and then you have the vegans. And the pescatarians and the vegans live markedly longer than the other two categories.
Interesting. And unlike the other blue zones, Loma Lindans aren't necessarily restricted to what grows in the immediate vicinity. They have access to supermarkets and all the same food variety that the rest of us enjoy here in the land of plenty. Is their diet more diverse than most of the other people in these isolated blue zones?
Perhaps slightly more, yes, because they have access to, you know, supermarkets and so forth. But the key, the through line here is both the Adventists and all the other blue zones live in an environment where the healthy choice is the easy choice.
Mm-hmm.
So in all the other blue zones, it's because that's, you know, beans, greens, nuts, and whole grains are cheapest and most accessible. Mm-hmm. Among the Adventists tend to hang out with other Adventists, at least in Loma Linda. And, you know, because they celebrate Sabbath on Saturday, you know, their kids aren't playing football Friday night and their girls aren't going to dance class. You know, they go to church together. So when you go over to one of your Adventist friend's house, nobody's barbecuing baby back ribs and, you know, shooting shots of tequila.
Okay. So it's easier to stay in that kind of healthy eating lifestyle.
Back to my thesis. If you want to live a long time, don't try to change your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Change your surroundings.
Right, right.
Central thesis of blue zones.
Yeah. I was also surprised to read that, I guess, two of the Loma Linden staples are, of all things, Weetabix and Vegemite. Now, Vegemite is, you know, mostly popular in Australia, although now I think that it's kind of started to spread, no pun intended.
But boom, boom, boom.
Weetabix, though, I mean, that is a uniquely British breakfast food. I don't think that I have ever seen Weetabix on an American grocery shelf. How did they get turned on to those two things, and where do they even buy Weetabix here?
Well, Weetabix is a lot like shredded wheat, I think.
Right, but I almost never see, I don't think I've ever seen it in the U.S., but in England, only cereal.
Well, it's believe it or not, it's the Adventists and because they have a plant based agenda and they're looking for the Adventists. By the way, started Kellogg.
That's right, John Harvey Kellogg. That's,
he's an Adventist. So they were looking for a plant based alternative to eggs and bacon and cornflakes. Came into grape nuts. then another. story. So the Australian equivalent of that is Weetabix and Vegemite.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Adventists to thank for figuring out how to eat a healthy breakfast.
Yeah. Now, just again, for a little refresher course, aside from the food aspect of this, remind us, what are the most important habits of longevity embraced in the Blue Zones?
So I don't like to use the word habit because I don't believe in it. You can change habits.
Okay.
But the characteristics are people live in – they can articulate their sense of purpose, worth about 8 years of life expectancy. They have sacred daily rituals that help them downshift and reduce inflammation, either prayer or taking naps or happy hour, very nice practice. They don't mindfully exercise in the way we exercise, but instead they live in places where every time they go to work or a friend's house or out to eat, it occasions a walk.
Okay.
They have gardens out back. So they're just mindlessly nudged to weed and water and harvest.
Uh-huh.
They don't have these electrical conveniences.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They tend to put family first, belong to religion, and curate a social circle of four or five people around them whose idea of healthy eating is vegetarian, whose idea of recreation is walking or gardening, and who are people who will care about you on a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So Blue Zones is pro-purpose, pro-plants, pro-social, and pro-pedestrian.
Okay.
That's kind of the four.
Good stuff. And before we go here, I want to mention again that you are sort of spreading these, I don't want to call them habits, but these Blue Zones practices or lifestyles to communities across America through this project you call the Blue Zones Project, which I think you started a few years ago. You even include a few recipes inspired by the towns that are promoting Blue Zones lifestyles. How many communities are participating in that now?
We're up to 50 cities, including Fort Worth, Texas, Orlando, Florida, and Austin, Texas. And it's not really me promoting. They come to me, actually.
Huh.
And I have a team. I have 200 employees now who, when we're invited into a team, we work with city council to pick food policies, active living policies, and tobacco policies that favor the healthy choice over the unhealthy choice.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Blue Zone certification program for restaurants, grocery stores, workplaces, schools, and churches. And during our 5 years in a city, we want to get at least 30 to 40% of those places certified. And then we have a third team that works with individuals to get 15% of people to reshape their social network, take checklists into their homes and their kitchen to optimize their surroundings. So we do a lot of work, but it's not silver bullet. It's silver buckshot. We unleash a swarm of healthy nudges and defaults. Often people aren't even aware of them. But in Fort Worth, after 4 years, and the mayor brought us in, and Texas Health Resources, paid for it. It's always privately funded. We saw a 6% drop in obesity at the whole city level.
Really?
Smoking dropped by
3%.
And Gallup estimates that our project is saving that city about $250 million a year in projected healthcare cost savings.
Wow.
Not because we changed their habits. We changed their environment.
Now, have you gotten the people in Fort Worth to eat fewer steaks and barbecue too? How did you do that?
So here's the secret. You don't come in and tell people what to eat. You don't take away their choices.
Right.
But we do, Fort Worth is called Cowtown. We got about 103 restaurants to offer some plant-based options.
That's a lot of restaurants. Wow.
It took us 5 years.
Yeah.
But when you go to the most famous steakhouse in downtown Fort Worth, you can get a grilled portobello if you don't want to eat a big chunk of dead animal.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, again, Dan Buettner's book is called The Blue Zones Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100. And of course, you can find all kinds of other cool stuff at his website, bluezones.com. Dan, thanks again for talking with me.
I'll meet you back here when you're 100.
All right. I hope so.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dan Buettner for coming on the podcast. Order his book, The Blue Zones Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100, on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold. Learn more at BlueZones.com and follow Dan on Twitter at BlueZones. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.